This is joint work with Ben Smythe, who actually gave a similar talk a couple of weeks ago at Black Hat. So we are both researchers, so if you've been there, sorry for some duplication. And if you have been there, tell me what I missed because I was not there, so it's a pity. So let's start with the context of web applications. So in a web application, you have a browser that is displaying the state of the application to the user so that the user has a perception of the application state. And then you have a server which really stores the real state of the application that is running. So for instance, when you want to send an email, you compose it on your web browser and you click the button send mail. This sends a message to the server which does the appropriate SMTP protocol exchanges, and once the email has been processed, it sends a message back to you saying, okay, your email has been sent, and your browser, for instance, on Gmail, displays a feedback saying your message has been sent. So this kind of feedback mechanism is quite known for graphical user interfaces. So for instance, when you save a file, you would expect the application to either tell you whether the file was saved correctly or it was or there was an error. Otherwise, you don't know what's the state of your file. But apparently, with the web applications, this thing can still go wrong, as the rest of this talk would show. So one difference is that in web applications, there is a remote communication between the browser and the server. So normally, they try to use TLS, or in web application HTTPS, which is built on top of TLS, to protect the communication between the client and the server. And actually, there are some subtle interactions that we are going to explore here between the guarantees that are provided, the security guarantees that are provided by TLS, and the logic of web applications. So TLS is a security protocol that provides server and optional client authentication, confidentiality, and interesting for this talk, it also provides integrities that we can read as that the messages are received as they are sent, both in their order and in their content. In particular, this is true for every single TLS connection that is established. But also TLS distinguishes between two termination modes, one that we call graceful closure. In this case, we have a guarantee that says that all messages are being received as they were sent. But there is also a fatal closure, which can happen when a message is received out of order or it gets corrupted over the network. And in this case, only a prefix of the messages are received as sent. And quite interesting, most of the browsers out there, the web applications built on top of it, and the web servers actually ignore the termination mode of TLS. And this is actually leading to some security vulnerabilities. So actually, as the TLS specification endorses somehow, failure to properly close a connection is not a big deal, and it's actually widespread implementation practice. So what can go wrong if we allow TLS connections to be truncated? So suppose you want to use your web browser to make a wire transfer to Charlie's Angels, and your web browser makes a request, which is a POST request, to some mybank.com amount, 1,000, and recipient Charlie's Angels. So now suppose TLS decides to split this browser request into two packets, or two fragments in TLS terminology. And suppose that the first is from POST up to Charlie, and the second one is apostrophe Angel. So then, if we can truncate TLS connections, then we can just drop the second fragment, for instance, by tampering with it so that the connection gets teared down, and we actually have a word transfer which is done to Charlie instead of the intended recipient, Charlie's Angels. So this works because the server ignores the termination mode, but also the web application the web server ignores the content length field because there are so many buggy web browsers out there that will not be able to compute the right content length. So whatever I receive, which is within a certain range within the specified content length, I will accept it. So again, the fix is quite simple. You could only issue wire transfer upon graceful closures, or just check the length of the messages. But yet, out there, this attack works against Apache, and we have reported the vulnerability, and we are discussing. So for the rest of the talk, we will actually focus on even simpler attacks, where we'll just drop an entire TLS connection that completely drops an entire message rather than parts of it, and we still can use this. This is sufficient to run our attacks. So what's the problem with these web applications? So one problem is that actually a browser, in order to speed up the loading time of a web page, normally keeps several multiple connections open with a web server, so that when you're loading a web page and this contains images, you can use another connection from your open pool of connections to the other server to in parallel load also this image. But crucially, TLS provides no guarantees across the content of multiple connections, and in particular, their ordering is not guaranteed to be preserved because they are independent connection from the TLS point of view. Just as a note, we consider a standard man-in-the-middle attacker, which has full control over the network, so it can read, delete, and inject messages. So what we show in this talk is a set of attacks which use a combination of TLS truncation attacks and exploitation of flows in web applications that allow us to cast vote in the Helios electronic voting system on behalf of honest user, take full control of Microsoft Live accounts, and gain temporary access to Google accounts. Actually, we believe that once this kind of problem is understood, this actually constitutes an attack vector, so some similar attacks might be found in other implementation or in other contexts. So let's start with the Helios electronic voting system. So this is a verifiable electronic voting system, which essentially resolved the problems of the girl that says, "I think I voted," because once the ballot is released, you can actually check cryptographically that your vote has been counted in the final ballot. It does not be used in governmental elections, but in the scientific community, it has been reasonably widely used, and it comes with cryptographic proofs of security. Yet there is an implementation on top of these proofs, and some flaws can be found there. So, just very quickly, when you use Helios to cast your vote, you go to a voting machine, you select your candidate, your ballot gets encrypted and sent to the bulletin board. Then other voters come, do the same action. When the election is closed, a set of trusted parties come, perform an homomorphic encryption, homomorphic operation on the encrypted votes, so that they get the encrypted tally, decrypted, and present the result to the users that can verify whether their vote was included or not. But one interesting feature of Helios is that to mitigate coercion, it actually allows users to revote several times until the election is open, and only the last vote is taken into account. Okay? And we are going to use also this feature. So what happens when you actually vote with Helios is that your browser issues a request to an URL which is cast down, the first in step one, which returns you a payload that says, "For your safety, we have logged you out," and then it contains an invisible iframe that loads the page out/logout. So due to this, to the presence of this iframe, the browser issues a second request to the server, which is to the auth logout URL, which has the side effect of logging you out from the system. So now the problem here is that the notification of sign out is given to the user before the request is actually made by the voting machine. So what we can do is we simply truncate request number two. We just tear down the entire connection, and then when the user left the machine, we just reload the page of the Helios voting system, and we are back logged in as the user, and we can cast the next vote on behalf of the same user that was using the machine. So the attack is possible here because the browser maintains several connections. So even if we just drop the TCP packet that was starting the request too, so hanging that connection, when we ask the browser to reload the page, it opens a new TLS connection and starts exchanging data with the server, with all the cookies that were stored into the browser, and the server doesn't know that the browser wanted to go to the auth logout page and actually perform a logout. So again, the fix is rather simple. Step one and two should be atomic. So when you cast your vote, this should also be the side effect. Should also have the side effect of logging you out, which is not the case with the current implementation. So a different flavor of this kind of attack is what we can have against Microsoft Live accounts. So in this case, the setting is the one of a trusted sharded computer, something like a public library, where the attacker cannot tamper with the computer, but can tamper with the network around it. So let me show a video demo that shows this attack. So here in this case, We have the host, which is actually implementing the network, where we have configured IP tables to drop packets of a certain length, which we know is the length of a logout request. And then we have a virtual machine, which represents the trusted shared computer, where the victim, so for instance, the computer on the library, where the victim goes and loads his Hotmail login page to start a session with the Hotmail server. Okay, so the user goes there, inputs his email address, which we set up for research purposes, try to guess the password. Okay, so at this point, we have set up the account in such a way that some basic details are missing. So when we try to log in into Hotmail, we are actually immediately redirected to account.live.com, which seamlessly opens another session with the account login website. And actually, at this point, we will just go on and not add any detail. And then we are redirected back to Hotmail, or Live or Outlook. There are several names for the service. But then at some point, okay, so the user reads his own mail, and then she is done, okay? So at this point, the user clicks on logout, but the host is dropping the packets, okay? So the network, the attacker is there and is dropping the packet. Yet, the user gets the "you are signed out" notification, but we selectively dropped the connection that was going to account.live.com, so the user is actually still logged in there. So at this point, the user leaves the machine, the attacker comes and goes to account.live.com, and voila, the user is still logged in, okay? So at this point, what we can do is we can actually edit some of the security information of this account. So for instance, what we will do, we will add an email recovery address, which is under the control of the attacker. So for instance, in this case, we use another email address that we have, but in this case it's at Gmail, and this represents that it's under the control of the attacker, okay? And crucially, doing this operation does not require to enter the current password of the user. So actually we can add this email, which is under the attacker control, without knowing the user password. At this point, we really log out. We hope that the original user is not attacking us, preventing us to log out. So at this point, we are really signed out. And what we can do, we can go back to the Hotmail page and pretend that we forgot the password, right? So there is a link at the bottom that says I cannot access my account. So here we input the victim email address. And then probably the most difficult part of the attack comes, which is reading this and inputting as it is. So sorry if it takes a bit of time, but it really took us that time. Okay, so at this point, we ask the service to send us an email to reset our password, and we can pick the email that it's under the attacker control. So at this point, an email has been sent to the attacker email address, which now you can guess the rest of the attack, goes to its own email address, logs in. Again, this is a research account, so gets the password. And the email loads, and well, it takes a little while, but okay. And on the top of the inbox, what you can see, you can also see that we tried it before. So there is an email from the Microsoft account team, which contains a link to reset the user password, okay? So at this point, it's enough to click there, and what you get is a new page where they ask you for the new password. You enter, the attacker enters the new password, and now the original user is completely locked out from his own account, and the attacker has full control over the account. Okay, so that's essentially how the attack can work. So back to the slides. So why is this working? Again, the problem is that the notification of sign out is given to the user before the server has really received the request of a sign out. And in this case, we really see that the client belief which is of being logged out, differs from the belief of the server, which is that the user is still logged in. And actually what we do is we selectively truncate some of the logout requests, and then we refresh the page essentially to access the same account on another connection. So to depict this, when the user clicks on the logout button, a begin logout request is sent to a server, which in the case of the Microsoft service sends some obfuscated JavaScript code. We couldn't really read through it, but the effect of it is that it actually sends in parallel several logout requests to every service where you have been logged in before. So one is to the logout account, one would be logout Hotmail, and so on. But only the Hotmail one is the one that gives you back a page that says you have signed out. So what we do is we just drop the request to the account logout request, and you are still logged in into that service. So the fixes are, well, maybe you can try with centralized authentication. So so the begin logout request starts something which is server side handled, which logs you out from all the services. But this could also increase some load on the server side. So another proposal that we have is you can actually chain the sign out request. So the browser is instructed to emit one logout request at a time, and this gives you information on the next logout action that you have to do. So that if at any time we drop any of these things, the user will see that the browser locked and you've signed out message is not coming back. Okay, so that's one thing. If you want to see it from another point of view, it looks like an application that is actually forking, spreading several threads, and then it's forgetting to join and to check the return status of all the threads that have been spawned. So while this is reasonably well understood in the context of desktop application, it turns out that when there is some TLS going on and some JavaScript, these things get more difficult to understand. So the similar attack on Google accounts work again in the similar setting of a trusted shared computer, because in this case, when you click the logout button on Google accounts, you do a request to accounts.google.com/logout. And actually, you have a sort of chained set of requests, because you have a continue URL which tells you which URL you should load next, and so on. But the way you are in practice logging out from Gmail is what happened at step two. So at some point you go to google.com/accounts/logout, and this downloads on your browser a web page which loads an image from mail.google.com/mail?logout. This is a one pixel wide image that when you download it has the side effect of logging you out from Gmail. This is the way you log out from Gmail. And then once your browser downloaded this picture, there is an onload JavaScript event that does a redirect that brings you to the next image. To the next page that will do the logout for the other services. So here, the way we can attack the service is that we simply tear down the TLS connection that is done by the browser to download the image on the Google on the Gmail server. And the way we do, in this case, we cannot just drop the TCP or TLS packets, because that will let the browser hang, right? Because it will be waiting to load that image. But we can simply send a TCP reset that destroys that connection. At this point, the browser believes that that image is not available, displays the broken icon, the icon of the broken image. But then immediately afterwards, the page is loaded. So on the onload event, the do redirect function gets executed, and so the user has no idea what's going on, whether the logout on Gmail happened or not, and it goes on with a you have signed out notification. So again, the problem is here that the fatal connection closure is ignored. Well, at several levels, both at the JavaScript level or at the HTTP level, and of course we can access Gmail using another connection. So this attack lasts only 5 minutes because on the Google server side, There's indeed some housekeeping. So after 5 minutes, if they discover that you have logged out from one service but not from the other, they will log you out from all the services. But actually, we believe that one fix could be to actually do this housekeeping on the same time where you request the logout, so essentially to centralize authentication, or at least to handle the FATA connection closure, for instance, adding an on-error event in this HTML page. Then incidentally, we also note that some of these URLs are actually HTTP and not HTTPS, which enables us to do many more interesting things. And this is also true for the Microsoft logout procedure, but we have been told that there are efforts to fix this at least. So, to summarize, we exploit some flaws in the web application logic and some problems with TLS truncation to tell the users that to let the user believe that they have logged out, while indeed both the web browser and the server are still keeping the full state that tells that the user is logged in. We show that we can attack at least the Helios electronic voting system, Google and Microsoft services. And so at the state of the art, trusted shared computers can offer no security. So we do propose some fix that at least trusted the shared computer would allow at least trusted shared computer to offer some security. We have disclosed all these vulnerabilities to their respective vendors, but none have been fixed yet. Google has higher priorities, Microsoft is working, and actually we are waiting for an answer. So what we believe is that desynchronization of the client and server perception state is actually an attack vector, because now that it's, so the idea is that if it's better understood and there is more awareness, well, maybe further attacks can be found in a similar fashion, but also maybe better programming techniques can be adopted so that similar problems are avoided in the future. Okay, so that's it. Thank you. And if you have questions. Okay.